Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Path of the Moonlit Hedge, Discovering the Magic of Animistic Witchcraft, by Nathan M. Hall. Foreword by Christopher Penzack. Narrated by Daniel Henning. Publisher's note: this audiobook contains references to material present in the print and ebook editions of the book. Foreword by Christopher Penzack. Do you remember that first night where you walked under the moonlight in some semi-wild place where perhaps you shouldn't have been? Whether you were alone or with another, there was a current of excitement, a thrill of the unknown coursing through your body. On one hand, such a moment is filled with this sense of illicit discovery. You're doing something most people do not. You are walking an edge. On the other hand, perhaps the unconscious realization that this is what should be, and walking in the wild under the full moon, is the natural state of all humans. We've simply forgotten. I remember my first moonlit walk with a thrill that, at the time, I could not articulate. I'd not quite hit puberty, but was old enough to find the world and all of our roles, responsibilities, and relationships quite complex and confusing. In our neighborhood, the archetypal neighborhood of the 1980s, where kids played outside all summer until the streetlights came on, now popularized in the nostalgia of shows like Stranger Things, our group would go back out after supper when the moon was full. We played a nocturnal game of kick the can. For those unfamiliar, the game is a bit of a Frankenstein's monster of a game, being part tag, part hide-and-seek, and part capture-the-flag. Being at night, we of course would go hide in the edges of the woods behind our suburban homes and wait for our opportunity to run out and win, listening in the dark for our fellow players. And when we listened, we would hear other things too. It was during those nights when we hid that I realized the mystery of the world at the edge of the forest. Of course, we played in the woods by day, finding small snakes and rummaging through the swamps. We would help by destroying infestations of tent caterpillars with a local Boy Scout troop leader and make our stick forts. Occasionally, we'd find burnt-out campfires of the older kids drinking and partying in the woods, and can see now how they too, with their hidden woodland parties, were seeking something primal and missing in our modern society, lacking meaningful rites of passage into adulthood. It was in those woods and fields where we would play wizard and witch, gathering ingredients for our spells and potions. But it was in the dark nights where you might hear things that you could not easily identify. The rustle of a not-so-small creature, the call of a nightbird, and even a surprised deer running away from you. You became aware of how everything was alive, and you felt like everything was watching you, though most things didn't necessarily care about you. You were simply there, something unusual for the creatures who normally dwelled in the dark to take notice. This world did not center upon you. It was in the dark that I found myself suddenly face to face with a giant spider web and the shiny spider in its center, luckily stopping myself before stepping into it. I was equally fascinated and freaked out, the awe found at the double edge of fear and fascination. I stared at it gleaming in the moonlight for quite a while before I brought myself back to the game. Summer vacations and running in the woods in both daylight and darkness brought an education that, though quite different from the rest of our school year, was just as valuable. Not that many years later, I had another moonlight adventure that started another important educational journey. While not in the woods, and in truth not that far away from where we played those nocturnal games, I was invited to be a guest at a local coven's full moon espit. While perhaps a less formal and likely thing today with the growing community of witches in the world, at the time, like a child walking alone in the woods at night, it was a somewhat illicit affair. At the time, it was secretive and formal and quite a big deal. It represented a great deal of trust and was not an opportunity offered lightly. While it was in someone's otherwise ordinary backyard, when we started, it might as well have been a clearing in the deep woods, a mountaintop in Germany, a stone circle in England, or the opening of a cave in Spain. The plants, trees, stones, and witches shimmered under the silvery light and the glow of a few candles and lanterns hung in the four quarters. In many ways, I was a child again in the dark, face to face with the spider in its web, but this time, the spider was the mystery of the witch goddess as embodied by the High Priestess. Despite my skeptical nature, I couldn't help but be enthralled. When she raised her hands to call to the moon, the clouds parted to reveal the full moon, giving everything a silvery white glow. When the rite was concluded and she said farewell to the moon, the clouds gathered again, and we were illuminated by only the remaining candles. In reading Nathan Hall's first book, Now in Your Hands, I'm reminded quite a bit about both those experiences and how they have led to so many of the changes in my life and worldview, great and small. While Nathan does not personally take you into the darkness for a game or to the formal ritual circle of a coven, he invites you to seek these mysteries in your own way. The animist worldview reinforces the idea that everything is alive and aware with consciousness. While showing you key fundamentals, if it is your first journey walking next to or jumping over the moonlit hedge, his deconstructionist, really decompositional, attitude is like the forest with its continual cycles of breaking things down and growing new things. Nathan looks at the things around us in the seemingly objective world through the observation of nature and takes you on some unique explorations, such as his mushroom magical talisman, as well as the forces with us in terms of our own personal consciousness, our souls, and the process to align and reorder our perceptions and consciousness. Art becomes key to shifting these perceptions to explore and experience yourself. His work encourages you to get outside and experience your place, time, environment, and most importantly, your relationship to it. And for those of us in lands having more archetypal four seasons and rhythms more common to classical witch folklore, such as my own home in New England, his experience and home life in Florida encourages us all to look outside of those familiar Wheel of the Year stories to relate to who and what lives in your own area. In going outside, we also learn to go inside and reflect upon ourselves beyond linear time and rational thinking to a sense of enchantment and wonder that I know I found in the dark under the moon. Lastly, he leads us into the world of spirit, rooted in, but adjacent to, our wild world of nature and our own inner consciousness. Don't simply listen to this book. Experience. Answer the invitation to go outside, to go inside, and to go over the moonlit hedge. Christopher Penzack, November 2022, Salem, New Hampshire. Christopher Penzack is the co-founder of the Temple of Witchcraft Tradition and non-profit organization based in New Hampshire with worldwide membership. He is the author of the award-winning Temple of Witchcraft series of books and recordings, as well as the co-owner of Copper Cauldron Publications. Christopher primarily serves as a minister in the witchcraft and LGBTQIA communities by maintaining a healing practice, teaching schedule, and leading small retreats, to sacred sites. Introduction. Let's begin with a garden. Lush and green, you can look across an expanse and see every variety of flower, vegetable, and some fruit trees in the far corners. A beautiful live oak shades the center and offers an anchor. A reflecting pool feeds a gentle bubbling stream that flows off and out of the garden. Surrounding this tranquil scene is a hedgerow of bay laurel, and as the sun sets and the full moon rises, the leaves gently reflect the glow of moonlight, lending an ethereal, almost hazy effect. When we approach the hedge, we see that it's not entirely there at all, as if its substance is both here and not here. We could walk right through it if we choose, but where would we end up? And would we be able to return? Would we be the same or irrevocably changed by the process? This is where your journey begins. This will be your home for this experience and will be a place you can return to frequently to recharge, reset, or embark on your next adventure. It's a place of peace and meditation, a sojourn from the modern world which provides many portals for you to explore. And while this garden is an inviolable place of safety, the hedge that you cross from here provide risk and reward. They provide opportunities for healing and growth and interaction with your own demons, land spirits, the gods, and ancestors. We are living in interesting times. We're living in challenging times. We're living in magical times. Never before has humanity, as far as we know, gone through an epoch quite like the one we're experiencing right at this moment. Some see it as a great opportunity, the front row seat for observing the next phase of humanity in whatever form it takes. The incredible part is that you get to choose your own contribution to this era. What will you contribute? How will you aid humanity and the planet that birthed you? It's exciting, challenging, and overwhelming. Horror and awe in equal measures are appropriate reactions. This era is a blessing and a curse for those of us who are living through it. And obviously, the younger you are, the more of it you'll receive. As a father, it is distressing, but I also have to accept the reality on the ground. Climate change, political polarization, a whole encyclopedia of isms, billionaire and millionaire classes with their mostly clueless children inheriting it all, and working people struggling to survive a system they didn't create and which largely doesn't benefit them. It doesn't sound all that fun, but with change comes possibility. And I encourage the magical folk who listen to this book to keep that in mind and gear your magic where it's needed most, in defense of the earth and its denizens, and a new path forward for humanity. As occultists, magicians, and witches, this is the time to cultivate and use our gifts and talents. A swelling tide. When it comes to my craft, my approach is, in a word, animistic. We'll delve more into animism later, but briefly, animism is the philosophy and belief that the universe and all of its inhabitants are imbued each with their own animating spirit or soul. When I started writing, there were few craft books I had been exposed to that covered the topic. Over the course of my study, a raft of new titles were released that touch on different aspects of animism. It was pleasing to see because I sincerely believe that this spiritual and philosophical approach is essential for our species to survive and take our next evolutionary steps on a changing planet. There's also a lot in this book about healing work. People are in crisis right now. Things are changing faster than we can adapt, and everyone in one way or another is feeling the burden of it. The heart of my witchcraft, and witchcraft in general, in my opinion, is healing ourselves in order to be the most self-possessed version we can be. Self-possession is empowerment, and whether that allows you to be the best healer, changer of fate, a mystic seer, or in whatever way you are able to contribute, your contributions are now requested and required. Doing the work that allows you to fully embrace this is vitally important. Working alongside the countless spirits that inhabit where you live is another key factor to creating the change we seek. For too long, humanity has excused itself from the rhythms of the natural world, from forging friendships and alliances with land spirits in order to work together. We'll endeavor to places natural and strange and seek deeper relationships and begin the work of reorienting ourselves and humanity's place within the universe. Finally, we'll explore the unique and powerful initiatory experience of the Witch's Sabbat, more fully committing to the work we've taken on. What does this book offer? I've done the exercises, meditations, and other workings included in this book. They've improved my life, and more importantly, made me more resilient to the grand upheaval that we're all experiencing. So, I'm bringing it all to you in the sincere and humble hope that you will get the same from it. This book is loaded with new workings I've created myself, and there are also many exercises that will be familiar to those who've spent some time studying the craft. I felt it was important to include both for those who might be new to these concepts. You can skip ahead if you're familiar, but as every person's practice is different, I encourage you to listen through and see if there might be even a small part that's new and usable to you. I'm excited to share this experience with you and hope you get as much out of it as I have and do. Magic is the wondrous inheritance of humanity, and I firmly believe that we are living in an epoch in which it will become more apparent. Blessings on your journey down the crooked path of the witch. 1. Hedgewalking, witchcraft, and animism. Walking the hedges is not for everyone. Even showing interest in this path reveals that you may actually have some aptitude for it. Being a hedgewalker is a decision, and not an easy one, because it means to fully embrace the oddities and peculiarities that most people spend a lifetime trying to hide or eliminate. This can lead to all manner of personality and energetic schisms that divert our energy and attention. True healing and balance is an ongoing project that most of us, in spiritual communities at least, say we want to achieve, but the hedgewalker knows that there is no straight line. Instead, they attempt to use the information collected along the way to assist themselves and others. Adopting the label of hedgewalker can be perilous. Labels are humans' attempt to more clearly identify things in the world so that we know how to organize them. It's great for sorting and organizing different species of plants and animals, attributes of stones, classifications of stars, and all manner of other things. People, on the other hand, are a bit more complicated, or at the very least, the labels we've inherited are no longer adequate for classification as our species continues to grow and recognize all kinds of new things about itself that actually were there all along. Selecting a label, a name, a title, and so on should be done with careful consideration because of the energetic resonance that assuming such a role carries with it. Quickly adopting and discarding labels may signal a lack of maturity, which is fine. Everyone goes through phases where they try things and experiment in order to figure out who they are or want to be. A normal part of being a young person is experimenting with identity. If this describes who and where you are right now, embrace it. There can be an inherent danger in frequent adoption of and discarding labels that may increase the possibility of creating a fractured personality, especially as you grow older. Fortunately, there are safe ways and safe spaces for play and discovery. Hedgewalking. The term hedgewalker often brings to mind associations with green forms of witchcraft, herbalism especially, and a sense of partnership with nature and nature spirits. All of this is part of my regular practice, but there's another layer of context that I and others have adopted. When I say hedgewalking, I'm talking about existing at the margins. Humanity has always benefited from those who've chosen to live at the edges of human experience. Think of Prometheus crossing the veil to steal fire from the gods and bring it back for the betterment of our species. Hedgewalkers participate in that same Promethean tradition to help others in their community, as well as deepen their own understandings of themselves and the universe. Shamans, medicine women and men, fairy doctors, mambos and hungans, village healers, and more have historically been associated with these roles. By the way, as a word of warning, you may want to read up about how Prometheus' efforts served him if you're unfamiliar. Hedgewalkers can sometimes find themselves on the short end of the stick at the end. In that same vein, queer people, trans folk, as well as BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, have experience with crossing the boundaries our society has manufactured. The concept of code switching, where people will change their style of speech, mannerisms, appearance, and behavior to make other, often white, people more comfortable, is one example. The term itself originated in the academic study of linguistics to define the free switching between two or more languages that frequently happens in bilingual or even multilingual communities, which could be seen as a sort of hedge riding of its own. People who are more comfortable, or at least familiar, with the practice of existing in multiple worlds might discover that hedgewalking witchcraft feels suited to them. And that's great. But hedgewalking, as mentioned earlier, is also about dipping into the places where few actually go, or would even reasonably want to go. Let's be honest. It's a very small part of the pagan community, to say nothing of the population at large, who have the curiosity, bravery, and foolish self-confidence, in equal measure, to endeavor into the world of spirits, gods, and the dead. For those who do, it's akin to starting the journey of the fool in the traditional tarot deck and going backwards to end the journey as the magician. You need to be both when venturing into the liminal. Over time, it becomes easier, especially if you work on staying spiritually clean, working through complexes, and healing and restoring the damaged parts of yourself. The liminal. The liminal, or liminality, is one of those terms that's become a bit of a buzzword in recent years. Meant to define a space that is neither here nor there, it's both. The hazy boundary where the ocean and the land kiss, where the mountain meets the sky, where the forest turns to mist, where lovers' lips first meet. As the latest phase in witchcraft popularity arose, a preoccupation with liminality came with it. For whatever the reasons, it's important to pay attention when cultural zeitgeists emerge because it often indicates something that's not being addressed in the overculture. Each generation that finds resonance with the term witchcraft brings with them their own definitions and flavors that define how they view and practice it and what the world sorely needs. Liminality was something needed by this generation, and it's really no surprise why. Bringing the liminal to the forefront is almost the calling sign for people who are inheriting a society that has clearly and unapologetically shut out so many. The liminal is the well of human creativity, where our concepts are challenged and changed. It is the cauldron of the witch, Caradwyn's cauldron of Awen, where we may be reborn, where metamorphosis happens. This is the place where real magic happens, and it is awful and inspiring, dangerous and deadly. All in a day's work then, right? As you listen and practice along with this book, keep in mind, if you feel like you're in over your head, it's best to back up and practice where you're at for a while instead of pushing through. At the heart of hedgewalking, we meet the liminal. But why witchcraft? Witchcraft. When I spoke with my personal guides and spiritual mentors, they made it clear that the term witch is an evolutionary and at times revolutionary epithet that needs to be nurtured and not discarded. It's hard to imagine it being revolutionary now, with it having been so mainstreamed, but it was and in some ways remains so. Where we are now as witches is definitely a more evolutionary period, one that is very important and potentially building toward a period of greater prominence and influence on humanity's fate in the coming decades. With that being said, the term witch exists in countless forms and has countless meanings. What does it mean to be a witch? Is it different in New Orleans than New York? And how is it different in Kenya or India? For much of human history, to be labeled a witch was akin to a death sentence and continues to be so in much of the world. Don't be lulled into thinking that just because you can find witchcraft books at Walmart, embracing the term is not a big choice, even in places like Europe, Australia, or the United States, where it's relatively safer to adopt the title. For myself, witch is a term that I eventually embraced after a lot of trepidation. After all, how was what I was doing significantly different from practices I'd seen others do who simply called themselves pagan or druid? I think the answer is that I just felt like a witch. It resonated and felt powerful in a way that other things did not. When I allowed myself to embrace the moniker, it was empowering, liberating, and even thrilling. At various times and through many explorations of esoteric subjects, I felt compelled to set aside witch as either not feeling very serious or being unnecessarily confrontational, but I never did because of its seemingly limitless potential for growth. In many ways, it is still a wild vine bearing exotic fruit that can heal and harm, depending on what is called for. Witches are the wild world speaking through humanity. Hedge witches, infinitely more so. Animism. This brings us around to another slowly building cultural concept. Animism. As I write this, I'm watching a steady stream of new books come out on the topic. It brings so much joy to my black heart to see the era of arch tech bros be met with something bigger. Facebook's Meta may offer an infinite experience, but it will always be a sad little world filled with manipulative algorithms. Compare it with the one we repeatedly abuse and discard, the one filled with infinite spirits, gods, humans, banana slugs, fae, barrow whites, cats, cacao trees, water bears, etc. were all atoms in a truly incomprehensibly massive thing that most of us call the universe.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?